Calgary Flames fans, it's time for Flames Unfiltered. Entertaining and controversial hockey talk with your host, Brad Berube.
Gaudreau wins it in Game 7 overtime. Bring on the Battle of Alberta. Good evening and welcome to Flames Unfiltered, a Stanley Cup playoff edition of the show. I am the host of the show, Brad Berube. Good to have you with us here as we got a great show tonight. Kyle Lewis is on the show again tonight. Yeah, he's a regular and he's always fun to have on the show. And lots to talk about as the Flames advance to round two of the Stanley Cup playoffs. That gets underway Wednesday evening and oof. It is against the Edmonton Oilers, and the stress level will be high, but the excitement level will probably be higher. You know, I enjoyed Series 1, but God, it was a hell of a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. Maybe I don't know. I try to be, you know, realistic about everything, but that was a hell of a series. And, I don't know. The whole playoffs have been pretty good this year. Five games go seven. Or five series go seven games. That's the first time since 1992. That's 1 year later than the last Battle of Alberta. You know, we asked for this Battle of Alberta. We wanted it. We've been saying it for the last, well, however long. And now that it's upon us and we're one sleep away from it, as much as I want it, I'm scared as hell to have it, if that makes sense. I don't know. Worried about how, if Tanev gets back and how we adjust our lines and stuff. But isn't that, I guess, what it's all about and what we're supposed to look forward to? With Edmonton, you know, the speed of McDavid and Draisaitl and the gritty and toughness of Evander Kane and how he can impact games. Worry me, the goaltending of Mike Smith excites me. That sounds crazy. This whole province and this whole country of Canada is going to love this one. And it is going to be good for the whole hockey world. Because not just people in Canada are pumped about this, but there is most hockey fans will pinpoint this series as the series they want to watch. Big show today. We're going to quickly recap the Dallas series. We'll preview round two of the Battle of Alberta. And then Kyle Lewis will join the show and we're going to discuss round one and the Battle of Alberta. And then we'll roll into some Flames news, Western Conference playoff matchups, wrap with a listener question. And yeah, it is time for the Battle of Alberta playoff edition. All right, Flames fans, let's quickly roll through the games that happened since we last talked last week. Game 5, Calgary comes out. Really good game, I thought. Really, really good game. 3-1. Probably, I don't know, in my mind, the most convincing game of the series for the Flames. That was a really good performance. And then Game 6, the game that frustrated the living hell out of me. Calgary drops a decisive game that would clinch the series. 4-2 to the Dallas Stars. And man, we were awful on faceoffs that night. Through two periods, Yarncruck hadn't, I don't think he even won a faceoff the whole night. And I'm not exaggerating that. He was 0-9 through two. And I don't believe he won any in the third. Backlund was 2-8. Lindholm 7-11. He was actually all right. But collectively 28%. You're not going to win hockey games doing that. You're not. And you know the Flames have not been good in elimination games, and finally we got that monkey off our back in Game 7. In the 80s, this team was rock solid in elimination games. They were 12-7. And since then, they're 4-13. How many of you had 2020 flashback into their head? Because I know I did. It scared the crap out of me to have that. You know, the Flames had lost four straight Game 7s at home. They lost to Edmonton in 91 in OT. They lost to Vancouver in 94 in two OTs. I'll never forget that, the Pavel Bure show. In 95, they lost to San Jose in two OTs. 06, they lost to Anaheim. And then two nights ago, they took that monkey and they friggin' threw it off our back. And now we don't have to worry about those stupid long stretches. You know what scared me going into Game 7? Is it back in 08 when they played the Sharks in Game 7? 14 years ago, yeah. Did you know that Joe Pavelski scored the game winner? He was good in this series, too. Guy is a gamer. Gets the job done. He was good. Daryl Sutter, 8-3 now in Game 7s. That's pretty good. That is pretty good. The history has not been good. But now we're past that. And Game 7 was a hell of a hockey game. Calgary, 67 shots on Dallas. Dallas, 28. And here's some key facts that didn't go our way in Game 6. And that is that hits were 35-22 in favor of Calgary. Hits were in favor of Dallas the previous game. Faceoff percentage, Calgary won 55% of the faceoffs. That is a huge improvement over Game 6. The power play didn't work real well. It was 0-3. But you know what? We only took one penalty in a Game 7. We gave them one opportunity on the power play. That's pretty damn good. That's really good. This was a hell of a series. And this team was down in Game 7. And seeing Johnny Gaudreau, who admittedly I've been hard on, come through in the clutch, send that red lot into a frenzy. Wow, would I have loved to have been there. That arena was something else. What a game. What an emotional win. And now it's time for the Battle of Alberta. All right, let's talk about this Battle of Alberta. We wanted it. We got it. This year, the Flames and Oilers are head-to-head. 2-2. The Oilers get by the Kings in 7, so they're worn out too. Let's kind of take a look at regular season stats, because that's really all we get to go off of head-to-head. This team, and I think you can take the regular season scores and the 9-5 great game from Calgary, one of my favorite nights of the year, and you can crumple it up and throw in the garbage. And I think we know what it comes down to. I think we know what this series comes down to. Markstrom has to be good. Calgary has to aggravate and get to Smith right away. We have to slow down. I don't think you can stop, but I think we can slow down Connor McDavid. Michael Backlund, I think you know what your job's going to be. We need to stay strong on Leon Draisaitl. We need to play a defensive game, not get into a run-and-gun matchup with them. Stay the course. And we need to stay the hell out of the penalty box and not get baited into Vander Kane and Zach Kassian's BS, because you know they're going to bring it amplified 100 times. Power play is critical. Edmonton's power play in the regular season was third in the National Hockey League, 26%. Now, Calgary was 22.9 and 10, so not bad. One thing Calgary has, though, is a good penalty kill. They were 6th in the league at 83.2. And maybe we can exploit Edmonton's 79.4, they were 17th in the league. Another player I didn't mention that I think is going to be key for both teams. I think it's important that Elias Lindholm has a great series. And it's the obvious one to say Connor McDavid, but you know who I think is going to be the guy I'm really going to be watching is Evan Bouchard. He's impressed me every single time I've watched the Oilers play this year. Now, he's no Miro Heiskanen that we had to watch in Dallas. Rewind the tape, though. Look at how many CNI shots he scored on the Flames in the last 2 years. Calgary was ahead of Edmonton slightly in goals for this year. They were six in the league at 3.55. Edmonton just a little bit back, seventh in the league at 3.48. So both these teams score. But here's the critical one. Goals against. Calgary third in the National Hockey League at 2.51. Edmonton 18th at 3.06. That's a weakness. And that's a weakness that the Calgary Flames have to exploit. You know, I look at the forwards, and I would have to give the top-end forward nod to the Oilers. How do you not with Leon Draisaitl, Connor McDavid? And then you look at the depth. I probably would take, I like our fourth line, even though Josh Archibald will be good. Derek Ryan will win faceoffs for him. Warren Fogle, I mark my word, he'll be a factor in this series. And, you know, you look at their second line, Nugent Hopkins with Kane and Hyman. Pretty good second line. But you know, you look at ours too, and it's pretty strong too. Forwards get the nod to the Edmonton Oilers. But on defense, I think the nod definitely goes to the Calgary Flames. And in goal, I think it definitely goes to the Calgary Flames. Power play, Edmonton gets the odd there. So it's important. It's important that we stay out of the penalty box. So what do the experts think in this series? I saw a ton of analysts pick Calgary. Tons. Hell, I even heard Wayne Gretzky pick Calgary. Sure, that one got Edmonton all fired up. But here's the probability. The probability that Calgary wins in four games is 9%. The probability that Edmonton wins in four games is 4%. The probability that Calgary wins in five games is 18%. The probability that Edmonton wins in five games is 8%. The probability that Calgary wins in six games is 18% also. Edmonton in six is 13%. Edmonton in seven, or Calgary in seven is 18%. And Edmonton in seven is 12%. Overall, Calgary is a 63% favorite to win this series, and Edmonton 37%. You know what, though? The emotions are going to be so high. The intensity is going to be so high. I think you can take and crumple all that up and throw it in the garbage. If Calgary plays their game and gets good goaltending and timely scoring, Calgary can win. If Edmonton's allowed to run free and Connor McDavid's able to put on a show and they get adequate goaltending from Mike Smith, Edmonton will win the series. This is going to be a dandy. This is going to be a really good series. Joining Flames Unfiltered, Kyle Lewis is back. We tried it last week while he was traveling in Ottawa and had some trouble. So we had a little bit shorter show last week, but that was okay because we were busy watching the Flames. And you know what? It was such a good conversation last week. Kyle is back again this week, and we've got a lot to talk about. Welcome to the show, Kyle.
Thanks again, Brad.
Dallas, we get by Dallas, albeit in seven, and yeah, we'd attack on an overtime to top it off. The stress level was extremely high with me, and I'm sure it was with you. How did you handle the stress?
Poorly. I mean, game seven, I was getting increasingly worried we were not going to put a third puck by Jake Ottinger, right? That was just an otherworldly playoff performance. One of the top probably three I've ever seen in the playoffs. It was wild.
You know, I tried to think back at other goaltender performances that were that dominating in the postseason, and I struggled to find one because I looked at the shot differential for the two teams, and I couldn't believe that we're sitting and getting ready for an overtime, and all I could think about was is Ottinger's going to steal the show here and we're going to be done.
Yeah, I kind of thought a bit about Jean-Sébastien Jaguar in Anaheim in 2003.
Yeah. Cam Ward came to mind for me.
Yeah, that's actually a good example, too. He never really reached those heights again either, really. But, it was scary. I mean, as I admitted on your show there a few weeks ago, I guess, I really didn't know much about the kid at all. And as the series wore on, up until... I guess game five, we looked like we started to turn a corner against him, but it was, what a performance. Wow. That probably should have been a six game series without him, I would say.
So after game six, the frustration level was really, really high, and you could see it on the bench, and I know I felt a heavy frustration level just because of the success we saw in game five.
Yeah, the success we saw all season long. I mean, this is a team that we've been saying for quite some time is built to win. And, that just had all the makings of a, forgive the phrasing, but a traditional Calgary Flames playoff letdown, right? So that's what it looked like in game six.
It did. It had, just some, old flashbacks of bad situations came racing back to many of our heads. And
so many.
and I'm not going to lie, like going into game seven, I had a weird feeling. Like I didn't have a win or lose feeling even. I had like a, I don't know, I had like a weird calm feeling. Like I wasn't angry. I just was like, I don't know what's going to happen, and I feel like it's 50-50. It could go either way. And that whole game, I was like in a daze watching the whole game, and it was a lot of fun. But I think I was so damn scared I forgot to like sit back and really enjoy like the luxury of playing for an opportunity to get to the second round.
Yeah, I think it was like a nervous excitement. It was strange because, like, I was not happy, obviously, when Jamie Benn opened the scoring, especially so early for the Stars. But usually that would rattle me quite a bit, and I felt kind of, like, robotic watching that game right up until – probably up until Kachuk's goal, just because, Kachuk finally scored in the series.
Yep.
And it looked like Kachuk, the Kachuk of old. So, but up until that point, it was just this nervous energy that I couldn't escape. And it was funny, like, even though – I got to bed at 3 that night, I think. The game itself ended around 1:45, but I watched all the post game. But, I mean, that nervous energy, like, I was glued to the TV, but I know it was just, and like you said, it was just a really strange, strange feeling, like, just waiting for the shoe to drop, I guess.
Yeah, no, I felt the same way. You know, this Dallas Stars team, as much as we've talked about Ottinger being so, so impressive, I thought as a whole, this team played a system and kind of followed the game plan very, very well through seven games. What Dallas Star player kind of stood out for you?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, Pavelski, he's always been good, but I mean, at his age, to put together a season like that, perform that well in the playoffs, especially in the first few games. I'm not going to say I forgot about the guy, but I certainly didn't pay any attention to him in the last few years since the last time he was a pain in Calgary's behind when he was in San Jose in the playoffs years ago. So he definitely stood out, but Miro Heiskanen, everybody knows he's a fantastic, fantastic defenseman, but to actually watch him control the play similar to like a Victor Hedman, like that was something to behold. There's a couple of really good players in that team.
It was shades of 2020 watching him. He was a guy that I pinpointed at the start of the series of a guy that I worried that would take charge of games, I remember when Erik Karlsson did that a few years ago in the playoffs, and I was like, man. And then you watch him and how well he skates and how well he's able to get those shots through in the upper slot. And yeah, he was really, really good. And another guy that kind of stood out to me a little bit that I was a little surprised, I thought Jamie Benn really was a factor. Like, I really thought he was. And I'm not taking anything away from him saying he's not a good player or anything like that, but there was moments in the series where he was extremely noticeable.
Yeah, he looked like the Jamie Benn of 5-6 years ago. He was definitely a factor. You know, obviously, again, he scored in Game 7 and was kind of all over the ice, and I thought that he played a really good series. Actually, the one guy who didn't, and I was really surprised because he was such a Flames killer last time in the bubble, was Dennis Garianoff.
I swear when overtime started, I was just like, oh, man. This guy's good. He came to my mind. I thought Nemetsnikov was good, too.
And, yeah, he was really good.
Yeah, and I was worried about – honestly, those are the two guys I was really worried about, you know, nipping us and getting us in overtime, because you're right. In 2020, that guy, he was a force.
Yeah, it was a miserable, miserable experience. I remember it like it was yesterday.
You know, I went on YouTube and I watched highlights of that game, and I just – I don't know why I would put myself through that again.
I was going to say, what the hell were you doing?
But that was just really miserable. That was bad, bad Calgary Flames. Oof.
Well, that was a team that, I don't know, it's so easy to say now, hindsight being what it is, but I mean, it's impossible to overstate how much of a difference Daryl Sutter's made.
Oh,
because
for sure.
The team just looks so, under the last few coaches, other than that stellar regular season under Bill Peters in 18-19, they just look
totally different.
Confused, lost, no identity. And I mean, Sutter alluded to all that, saying they needed an identity. But yeah, like there was a bunch of us who were saying, is it time to move on from this player to that player? And you'd think after trying two or three coaches, well, it can't be the coaching. Well, you know what? In large part, anyway, it was the coaching.
Yeah, it's surprising. It is really surprising because. I don't know. Yeah, we know we talked about all the player moves prior to the season, and we criticized some of them too. But
it just with good reason at the time.
Yeah, but it just seems like everything has fallen into place so well. When you think back to this Dallas series, what Flames player do you kind of consider an unsung hero?
Oh man, I'm so glad you asked that. Absolutely, unquestionably, Michael Stone. And I'll give you a few reasons for it. I mean, the first game he played, he led the team with 8 shots. Every one of them just a cannon. And he always, not always, but kind of always hits the net. And I don't know how you shoot a puck that hard and do that.
It's a foot off the ice, and it's hard.
Yeah, every time. So it starts with that. He 8 shots to lead in that game, 4 shots to lead the team in the following game. He had a goal and an assist in game 6. Actually, a really nice goal, perfect jump into the play, and then an assist in Game 7. And but the biggest thing in Game 7 was he filled in unbelievably well for Kristanov.
Yeah.
His gap control, his play along the boards, like the way he tied players up and in such a way that he didn't take any penalties. I mean, so this is a guy who he had his ACL and MCL repaired back in 2016, missed 6 months, okay? Comes back to the Coyotes, gets traded to Calgary at the deadline. Team goes out in the first round. He gets a 3-year contract extension at $10.5 million. Plays the next season barely into the lineup after the first couple months. I can't remember if it was that year or the following year. So at this point, he's a fringe defenseman. He gets a blood clot in his arm.
Yep.
He misses almost that entire season. Comes back, plays a couple of games towards the end, plays no playoff games, even though the team had made it. Bought out that summer, re-signed for league minimum, basically a fringe defenseman again. Year later, another league minimum deal. He might even be on his third one now. Like, this is a guy that has, for all intents and purposes, no business being in the NHL.
No.
And has he ever proved that he can still play in the NHL?
I've always kind of had a soft spot for him, though. I've always thought he had, you know, obviously a great shot. But for some reason, and I know I've said this on the show probably 15 times, I feel like things, he's a calming factor out there, and he's one of the guys that I don't worry about. And I'm not saying, like, I'll use Oliver Shillington, for example, and don't get me wrong, Oliver Shillington has had a breakout year. He's been far better than any of us would have ever predicted.
Yeah.
But there is time still that I'm like, whoa. Like, whoa, what is he doing?
Well, that's why he's paired with Kristanov, right?
Yeah.
And you're right, 100%, and it's no indictment to Shillington, a really skilled player, great skater, sees the ice fantastic, but defensively, he's not as polished as we'd like him to be. He's definitely an NHL regular and had a great season, but I know exactly what you mean. You see him out there every now and then, like he'll make a little move at the blue line. It's like, oh, you know, one poke check, that's a 2-on-1 or a breakaway kind of thing, right? I've never seen that with Michael Stone since he's been, well, I can't remember the last time that he was like that, quite honestly.
I know. That's what I mean. I feel safe with him out there. I do. I bet you if we had Daryl Sutter on the show, he would say the same thing. I feel safe with him out there.
Yeah, and I don't know. Again, like, there's him first and foremost because the guy does not and will never get enough credit for how admirably he stepped in. He was a fantastic defenseman every game that he played. So much so that I don't know how you take him out against Edmonton. Like, I know Richie's a big body, might want to go back to 60. I'd be tempted to run with 70 because Stone he deserves to play as much as anybody.
I honestly think even if Tanev is not healthy and he still plays, like, if Tanev is not healthy and doesn't play, well, 60 and Stone will fill that spot and do fine, yeah. I think. Tanev plays, we'll do 70 just in case Tanev can't go 100%,
yeah,
is what I think will happen.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, we don't know because optically, like, Tanev was full participant in practice today,
mm-hmm.
which indicates he probably will play tomorrow night. But, I mean, it's the NHL playoffs. It could just be for optics, right? Maybe he's not quite 100%. He's just getting some reps in. Maybe he'll play on Friday. Who knows? But, yeah, at least we know we have a really, really strong option to take his place.
And a great sign, though, that Tanev's back because he is going to be so critical to the success down the stretch here as we roll into round two. You know, let's talk a little bit. Who do you think was the best Flames player in this Dallas series?
Man, you know what? That's a really tough one. I guess I'll answer that in two parts. The best player, especially after the first couple games, is probably Michael Backlund.
That's what I was going to say, too, yeah.
Well, even in Game 7, like, he... That hit he threw in the first couple minutes in the corner, holy hell. I had to do a double take to see that it was him that threw it. Like, that was unreal.
He just got better as the series went on. Because, you know, honestly, I will say, in Game 1 and 2, he was not a factor at all. No. And Game 3 kind of came on a little bit, but 4... got better. 5, 6, and 7, he was, I thought, our best player.
Yeah, I would agree. And right there with him, and this is kind of the second piece for me, I'm done, and I mean done, with criticisms of Johnny Gaudreau in the playoffs.
You know, Kyle, I'm probably, you know, you can rip me a new one on this one, because I was really hard on Johnny Gaudreau last year.
And I think a lot of people
I was even hard on him. I'm not gonna lie. I threw out the hey, I saw it in the regular season and it was wonderful. Prove it to me in the playoffs, and he did. And I'm man enough to sit here and say, you know what, I was completely wrong, and I'm extremely happy for that. And now, open up the checkbook. Let's talk.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, I guess on a lighter version of that, like, I was extremely critical of, like, the Erica Branson signing. I thought the money was ridiculous. It kind of made me think of the Derek Engelin deal a few years ago. It's like, what? Why? And, man, did he ever prove me wrong. He had, like, 6 or 7 goals, first of all. Like, what? But he was just – he had a couple of rough games, but overall was fantastic all year. But, like, when you look at Gaudreau's points per game in the playoffs, it's actually always been pretty – solid, but
it has, his numbers aren't that bad. It's just that he would be, you know, that Colorado series just, like, freaking wrecked my attitude with him, because it was like, and it wasn't just him, there was a lot of guys on this team that were great hockey players all year that year that absolutely ran and hid in the closets, and it was it was an awful mess. And, you know, he was part of that. And,
well, I think he draws a lot of the ire because the expectation is, as it should be, he's one of your best players. You expect him to lead his team into the fight, and at the time, I would agree that that wasn't the case.
Yeah, but he definitely came to play hockey in this last series, and I pray he does in the Edmonton series, and I guess I have no reason to question that he wouldn't.
Well, there's a few things. I mean, for one, he loves playing for Daryl Sutter. His two-way game... he's like a completely different player. Like yeah. he's so engaged, and I think the fun part for him, not that I'm going to speak for him, but from what I'm seeing is he's so strong defensively now, and it's caused him to have his best offensive season. You know,
it's given him confidence. It's given him confidence offensively, though.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, and he still makes the same magical plays, but with next to no defensive errors. And if he does make one, he's the first guy back. He skates his bag off to correct his errors, right?
So were you a little pissed, though, the first period in Game 7 at the first line? Because I was.
Oh, absolutely.
They were minus two.
Yeah.
And I saw three or four weak stick checks from Tkachuk and Gaudreau, and I was like, ugh. And then it was like in the second period, is like a whole new team. And then they start rolling off the shots, and like confidence gets going, and it's like a whole different team.
Yeah, and I don't know what happened there. I mean, with Tkachuk, there's been a lot of talk that I've heard he might have a broken hand. Like, he sure didn't look like it on that goal, but he was, for right up until the second period of Game 7, a non-factor in the series. Well, to the point that we could have lost the series based on Ottinger being so good and Tkachuk just not being good enough. Like that, you know, those two factors definitely played off each other. But I'm not sure what the problem is there, but did they ever snap out of it? Thankfully.
So that's my, and this will be my last question on the Dallas series, and then we'll move on to the brighter things ahead. Was Matthew Tkachuk the most disappointing player in round one?
Yes. I wanted to make sure I was really thoughtful on that. Yeah, he was. Lindholm was really strong, especially early in the series. Backlund got better as the series went on. Pretty much everybody else did exactly what you thought they would do. Dubé was all over the ice, skated really well.
Dubé got better.
Yeah.
I thought Mangiapane got better.
Mangiapane had...
Because I was a little bit mad at him.
Goal of the series.
Yep, for sure. I just, you know, I think there was moments where Tkachuk was good. I do. But I think for the most of the part in this series, I think the first three games, his head was in the wrong place. And he didn't look, I don't know, he just didn't look engaged at times, which is mind-boggling.
I think he got baited early on with that.
He did.
That scrap in game one. Like, that was, I'm like, oh, man, like, what are you doing? Like, you're so much better than that, right?
He got owned. He got owned. Yeah. He did.
Yeah. The other guys, Trevor Lewis, Milan Lucic, those guys did exactly what you thought they'd do and probably a little bit better than I thought they would. There was one shift in that fourth line in Game 7.
Yeah.
That, and actually the one in overtime where Hanifin nearly scored. It's like they were just – that possession game down low was just fantastic. And actually I'll give a shout-out to that, like to Milan Lucic. Like, he had a really, really strong Game 7, I felt, for, you know, for a guy that's – can be burdensome at times. Mm-hmm. He's definitely somebody you want in your lineup, I think, in the playoffs, and I hope he's going to be a big factor against the Oilers.
I hope so too. And let's shift gears and let's talk about that series. Is the Battle of Alberta? We finally get it. It's been since 1991. Now, Here's the question: do you really want the Battle of Alberta?
Well, all right. This, for me, it's and maybe so for you as well. Like, I travel to Calgary pretty frequently, but I'm not from Calgary. I don't have the same. I don't think it would be fair for me to say I have the same hatred of the Oilers that a lot of Calgarians do. So I'm always on the side of whatever Canadian team can go the furthest. So in the sense
I'm
of
not.
Two Canadian, what's that?
I'm not.
Yeah,
I'm serious. See, like I'm done with Edmonton over the last 30 years of, I'm done. I cheer for them to lose to everybody.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So they're like my father's version of the Montreal Canadiens, and I gotcha. Cause he's a big Bruins fan. It's the same kind of deal. I think, like, taking my own personal opinions or feelings out of the equation, it's the Battle of Alberta in the playoffs is the best possible thing for hockey, especially in Canada. I mean, it's going to, especially for Alberta, obviously it's going to be fantastic. From a personal perspective, there's always a bit of fear when you have a 7-game series against Connor McDavid. How can there not be? The guy is unbelievable.
Yep. I agree. I couldn't agree more. I think, I mean, yeah, I got to tell you, I'm happy we're doing a Battle of Alberta, but I'm not going to lie. I was kind of cheering for the Kings down the stretch. I don't know. I just, it's a fear not so much, not so much playing the Oilers, but I just don't want to lose to the Oilers. Like, I'd rather lose to anybody but the Oilers, you know? So yeah. I feel like we're just cheering to not lose now, you know? And I think that's human nature. I think, you know, I mean, it's the Battle of Alberta. It's going to be crazy.
I'll be honest. That in this case, another feeling of mine, like, I'm with you 1,000%. The thought of losing to the Oilers to me is, it's just, it would just be the worst.
Yeah,
I mean, because of our Twitter interactions, a really close friend of mine is a huge Oilers fan. So I the people I work with, a couple of them are Oilers fans. It can't happen. Calgary's going to win it.
I have some good friends that are Oilers fans, and I got a couple guys from some Edmonton Oilers podcasts that I have become really close to over the years doing podcasts together. And I can't imagine how hollow of a feeling that's going to be if that happens, but let's not get too far and hope.
I don't think it's going to. I mean, to be perfectly honest and objective, but I really don't think so. But again, when you have Connor McDavid, he can take a team really far, if not all the way.
So what does Calgary have to do to beat Edmonton?
Well, get to Mike Smith. Mike Smith is an extremely emotional goaltender. We saw it when he played for the Flames. He drove us nuts. He was also the only reason we even won a game against Colorado in 2019. So first and foremost, and it's cliche, but Lucic, Kachuk, those guys, get to the net and drive Mike Smith crazy. Because he's very erratic. He's very moody. He flails a lot. He throws himself at shots as much as he plays positionally. So this is not Jake Ottinger, and in many regards is far, far from it. This is a goaltender, the back nine of his career. So that immediately, that's the first thing they got to do. And I mean, if that leads to, you know, maybe they blow them out in a game and Koskinen comes in. Koskinen's not a crazy experienced goaltender either, so I think the message remains the same. Apart from that, just stick to their game. Stick to their game and avoid dumb penalties, because you know that, yep, especially Evander Kane, and also guys like Zach Cassian are going to try to bait players like Kachuk. And Kachuk is way too good to be sitting in the penalty box.
I'm worried more about, I mean, I think we need to put Backlund on McDavid.
Yep.
I think Smith's extremely fragile, and I know people will be like, well, he had two shutouts in the first round and he was good. Yeah, he was, but that guy can also let in 8 at a drop of a hat. Believe me, I've seen it.
Me too.
So I think those are key, and I think the third key is just let's not play the Evander Kane BS, because I know he and Kim and Cassian are going to be all over it. But you know what I like? I like that we've got Lucic, Zadorov, Gabranson, all right there.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I gotta give a shout-out there, too. Nikita Zadorov, he had a pretty decent series against Dallas.
I thought so.
He threw a couple of huge hits. I loved when he was mouthing off to Jamie Benn. I mean, yeah, he's a huge dude, obviously, but still, like, he's into it big time. And that was really cool to see. And to be honest, pound for pound, player for player, I don't think that the Oilers can match the Flames, and I'm sure any Oilers fans that would be listening to this, they're going to think that I'm biased. But when you look at each roster, like, I think Calgary's a tougher team.
I think they got to avoid,
like we talked about, just avoid getting into some of the shenanigans, especially early in the series, because the one thing that does worry me a bit, Calgary has a fantastic penalty kill, but you do not want to test it against a McDavid-led power play.
Cannot.
No.
We will not win.
100%.
What style of hockey should Calgary dictate?
Well, pretty much the same one they've had success with all year. You know, you can't get scored on if you get the puck, right?
I puck possession is going to be huge. Shots. I just know that Edmonton's going to want to do a run and gun. And I think it's in Calgary's best interest to trap the hell out of them.
I'm having
these wonderful memories flooding me of Robert McGuire destroying Alashensky in the corners. And I think that's kind of in part what they need to do. You know, guys like Zadorov, Gudbranson, Michael Stone, Chris Tanev, you got to wear those guys down in the corners. And same with the fourth line, Lucic, Lewis, Richie, if he's playing. Backlund, who, as we just talked about, can apparently throw a massive hit when he feels like it. Tons of shots and tons of hits. That's the answer to this series.
I think the more shots we can get on Smith, the better. And if we can get him to play the puck, too, I know everybody tells us how great he is at playing the puck. I beg to differ. I've watched him screw up so many times. And we've all been there watching him drive us crazy.
I've never forgiven him for my last trip to Calgary when I was at the Jersey retirement for Jerome McGinley. I had box seats, the whole nine yards. And he got stuck behind the net, couldn't figure out what to do with the puck, apparently. And they're playing Minnesota Wild. The Wild basically just stole the puck from him, tucked it in the empty net, and they won the game 4-3.
Yep.
And I was so angry. It was just like, it was so needless. And to your point, Brad, I think for every highlight you show me of Mike Smith making a great play with the puck, I can show you two where he made a mistake.
I can too. And that's why it just blows my mind. You hear all these analysts say how wonderful he is at playing the puck. Just because somebody plays the puck a lot doesn't mean they're good.
You know what? I think we just made a great drinking game. Yep, 100%. We're just going to look up videos of how many times Smith screws up. We'll take a shot every time. We'll be hammered in no time.
That could be an ugly. You know, it's funny. You know, it's funny. I honestly go a little off topic here, but we'll redirect here. I actually, two years ago, at the end of the season, I have some friends that do the Oil Country podcast, and we decided to have like just kind of like a Pacific Division barroom podcast one night, and we got our drink of choice, and we just turned on the video and audio and talked hockey.
Yeah.
And it was 2 hours of hilarious Edmonton Oilers Calgary Flame fun. And I, you know, when this series started, I thought, oh, I'm going to call those guys and line it up so at the end of the series, I could get you and we could get like four, five, six of us on there and do this. But then I thought, oh, crap, I can't do that because what if we lose? I don't want to be there listening to John and Kyle give me a hard time. So we'll see how it goes, and then I might reach out to those guys. But we had a lot of fun doing that last time. So,
oh, no doubt. No doubt. There's actually been a lot of good tweets, a lot of good conversation, too, about how cool this is for both teams, for the province, for the fans. We kind of get lost in the rivalry. We all have that fear of what if Edmonton wins or what if Calgary wins, depending what side you're on. But it's nice to see some of the humility and the honesty coming out. It's like, you know what, this is really cool. Both teams in the second round. Let's see how it goes.
I think the excitement level is going to be great. And, I think the whole hockey world is going to take notice of this series. I have a ton of friends that are not Calgary Flames fans, and I've talked to them, and they have their own team in the playoffs, and they're like, I'm more excited for the Calgary series. So I've gotten phone calls and texts through this week on just how excited people are for this series. So it's going to be a good one. The big question, will either of these two teams have anything left when they're done beating up on each other?
Yeah, that's going to be tough. I mean, I was thinking about this. One of the unique differences of the playoffs this year is that you've got two series, Florida, Tampa Bay, and Calgary, Edmonton, wherein there is essentially no travel. Both cities in both cases are approximately 2.5 to 3 hour drive apart. So that is a huge factor in the playoffs. You got Colorado and St. Louis have got to travel, and then you get Carolina and the Rangers, which I think to answer your question more pointedly, they're going to beat the hell out of each other, but Colorado has got a really, I mean, for number one cup favorite in most people's minds, no disrespect to the Lightning, Colorado's going to have a really tough series with St. Louis. So I think whoever comes out of Calgary, Edmonton, again, I do think it will be the Flames, they're going to be facing a team that's probably going to be just as banged up as they are.
Yeah, I think so too. I think I take a look around at all the series that are left, the two in the East and both in the West, and I think all of them are going to be physical, and I think they're all going to be, you know, difficult series. I'm just thinking the Battle of Alberta is going to be a whole new level, and travel is going to be a big factor in helping both those teams out. Whoever survives this this dog fight that it's going to be, but
I think it'll offset the wear and tear of the series at least to some extent.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my hope anyway, because it is going to, like you say, it's going to be rough.
Well, you got a big week ahead, Kyle. You're heading to Calgary and going to be checking out game two.
Yeah, game two at the Dome. I actually fly out of Moncton first thing Friday, go to the game that night in Calgary, and I'll be at the Red Lot for game three on Sunday and then fly back home on Monday. So, yeah, it's kind of a last-minute plan, bit of a whirlwind, but hoping to meet up with a bunch of my Twitter peeps there and have a few drinks and take in some good hockey and make the most of it. Should be a blast.
Oh, shit. It's going to be a great time, and I can't wait to hear the stories. So thanks so much for
coming. That'll be funny.
Thanks so much for coming on the show, and, yeah, we'll have you back real, real soon, and enjoy the Battle of Alberta.
Likewise. Thank you very much.
All right, Flames fan. Time for a little bit of Flames news. Johnny Gaudreau snubbed on the Hart. The 2022 Hart Trophy finalists voted on by the Professional Hockey Writers Association. Austin Matthews, Toronto. Connor McDavid, Edmonton. Igor Shesterkin, New York Rangers. It's hard to argue with that. I do always feel, though, that Connor McDavid's just the automatic. I don't know. Johnny Gaudreau definitely made a run at it this year and opened a lot of eyes and probably should be one of these three. But I think the prize we want to win probably lies ahead. Lindholm was named a Selke finalist today, along with Alexander Barkov and Patrice Bergeron. And that one, I can't say it frustrates me, but it does a little bit. It's his first time that he's a finalist for this. Craig Conroy, well, it's the first time a Flame has since Craig Conroy was in 01-02, but it's also Lindholm's first time being a finalist in this too, and I don't know, nobody in the franchise history has ever won this award, and he posted a plus 61 rating in 82 games this year, and only Johnny Gaudreau was better at plus 64. I don't know. And he's also, you know, he's such a top playoff performer. He puts points up, and he's so strong both ways. It frustrates me. He won 52.9% of his faceoffs this year. He's just kind of everything for the Calgary Flames as far as proving himself as a first-line center this year. And I feel bad that I don't feel like he's going to win this. I feel like this is the Patrice Bergeron Award, and that's just what it is. And until he retires. That's what it'll be. I wish this award was a little bit more for the defensive forward and not so much the defensive forward that puts up a ton of points, which is always the way it is. But that's the way it goes. And you know what this does, though? This gets Lindholm's name in some recognition. So in the coming years, if he keeps progressing as a player, he will win this award. Nikita Zadorov lays down a monster hit in Game 6 against Luke Glendening and pretty much KOs him. My initial thought was he's going to get suspended. There was no penalty called on the play. I thought he was going to get suspended just because it was a big hit, and that's kind of what we do in this league is we penalize the result and not so much what happened. But no penalty was called on the play. And then he was called in for a hearing, and I thought, oh boy, he's going to be out game 7. The league came out and said, after thoroughly reviewing all available video and following a telephone hearing today, the Department of Player Safety has determined that there will be no supplemental discipline for Calgary's Nikita Zadorov for his hit against Dallas's Luke Glendening. While there was significant head contact on this play, Zadorov took the proper angle of approach, did not extend outward and upward, and hit through Glendening's core. Therefore, under Rule 48.1, the head contact was determined to be unavoidable. I think it was the right call. Stockton Heat, yeah. They are hot, huh? They just got done sweeping Bakersfield, which is Edmonton's farm team. That's good to always have, huh? And they're now off to the third round, which is, I believe, the conference finals against Colorado. So that'll be interesting to see how the Heat do as they're on their playoff run, just like the big club and the Flames are. Some injury reports. Chris Tanev missed Game 7 with a suspected upper body injury. Did practice on Tuesday today. That was great news, and we'll see if Chris Tanev's able to go Wednesday night. Oliver Shillington, who looked like he suffered a shoulder injury in Game 7, stayed in the game 7, but did go down the tunnel and looked a little uncomfortable, I guess you'd say. Did practice on Tuesday also. Looked like all hands on deck. Everything moving in the right direction. Western Conference playoff series, and the Oilers did get by the LA Kings in 7. Colorado gets by Nashville in 4, and in 7, or 6, excuse me, the Blues get by the Minnesota Wild. So that sets up a Colorado Avalanche St. Louis Blues series in the Western Conference. That gets underway this evening, and that'll be a good matchup, and we'll see how Darcy Kuemper, if he can get back in the nets from his injury, that'll be an important thing. The Blues were pretty much crushed last year by the Colorado Avalanche, but it seems just different this year, doesn't it? Seems like that Blues team is just a little bit more in tune and clicking in the playoffs this year than they were last year. And then, of course, our series, which, it's going to be a dandy. So today I posed a question on the Flames Hub and the Calgary Flames fans Facebook groups. And I'm sure some people read my question and thought, yeah, what's this guy talking about? But I just posed a question because I wanted to see what some of the people were thinking. Because I know I put a lot of thought into it this week because I was like super gung-ho about a Battle of Alberta. But then when it happened and the realization came late into the morning on Monday night, or Sunday night, excuse me, Monday morning, that this was really going to happen, I got a little bit worried. Not worried that the Calgary Flames can't win, but worried that what if we lose? How will we be able to handle that as a fan base, as a community? I'm trying to just kind of put it in perspective as, you know, it's a game and we want to win more than anything and we sure don't want to lose, but I really don't want to lose to the Edmonton Oilers. So I posed this question, and you know, I got some really good responses. And it seemed like, all in all, most people really want this. They want this challenge. A couple guys wrote, absolutely, the Flames are far deeper with better defense and goaltending and will expose Edmonton's poor defense and goaltending. Go Flames, go. A bunch of absolutelys. A lot of hell yeah, bring it on. Dylan Simpson threw in, I didn't care who we played in round 2. And you know what, Dylan, I'm the same as you on that one. I didn't care. Even though I'm not going to lie, I found myself thinking that LA is the easy route. I also learned from past experience that you can't wish for a team. Bad things happen then. Arthur wrote, I wouldn't want it any other way. It's going to be great for the province. A lot of people threw their predictions in here. Anthony wrote, it is a game within a game. You have to go out and win every single series to move on no matter who it is. Flames can do this. Keep shooting as many as you can on Edmonton, and Edmonton will run out of goalies. A lot of confidence in Flames land. I'm not going to lie, I feel pretty confident too. But I do think that Calgary has to play their game. They have to stay the course and make sure they don't get into an offensive run and gun. But you know what? To answer this question is really going to come down to when it's done. If we win, it's going to be the greatest Battle of Alberta we've ever lived, right? And if we lose, it's going to be the worst Battle of Alberta we've ever experienced. But all in all, I think it's great for the teams. I think it's great for the province. And I think it's great for the hockey world.
Get all your Flames Unfiltered podcasts, team news, team updates, and highlights at flamesunfiltered.com. Go!
All right, Flames fans, let's quickly roll through the schedule and what lies ahead as round two got underway on Tuesday today, and the Flames get underway Wednesday. That's May 18th, a 7:30 start time in Calgary, game one. Game two will be May 20th, which is Friday night, and 8:30, a late night start. That's game two. Game three moves up to Edmonton. That'll be on Tuesday, May 22nd. At 7:30 p.m., game four goes the 24th of May, which is a Tuesday night. Let me figure, make sure I got this right. We got 18th is Wednesday. If we go Friday the 20th, game three is Sunday the 22nd at 7:30. I should probably get my ducks in a row before I do this, right? And then game four is two nights later, the 24th. That'll be game four in Calgary. That one's also a 7:30 start time. Game five will be Thursday night, the 26th in Calgary. Time to be determined. Game six will be the 28th, which is a Saturday night, next Saturday night. A week from this Saturday, actually. And that one will be in Edmonton. Time to be determined. And game seven, if it goes game seven, will be on Monday, May 30th in Calgary. A start time yet to be determined. Buckle up. Get your meds ready. This is going to be a stressful week. This is going to be a wild and crazy week. But it's also going to be more one of the most fun weeks to be a Calgary Flames fan. Or hell, a hockey fan for that matter. All right, Flames fans, we got to be respectful. We got to be confident. We got to be positive. It's only a game, albeit extremely important in all of our lives. But it is also a series we have to win. Check us out on flamesunfiltered.com. You can get all the podcasts on all podcast players, and you can also get us on YouTube with the video version at Inside Edge Hockey Media Group. Going to be a great week, Flames fans. This is what we all wanted. Really enjoy this. It's supposed to be fun. It's the experience. I hope the Red Mile's rocking the red a lot. I watched that video 100 times of the celebration. It's amazing. And you know what? It's time for the Battle of Alberta. Get connected. Flames Unfiltered can be found on Twitter at Flame Unfiltered. And also make sure you check out our Facebook page, at Flames Unfiltered. Check out host Brad Brood on Twitter, at Brad Brood. And if you like what you hear, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can find Flames Unfiltered on all the major podcast players. Thanks again, and enjoy the hockey action.
Play on! Yeah, baby! Play on! Yeah, baby!
Thanks for tuning in to Flames Unfiltered. Check back for more action-packed Calgary Flames talk. This episode of Flames Unfiltered was copyrighted and produced by Inside Edge Hockey Media Group.